This shiur has been brought to you from the Sharim Audio Library. For information about Sharim or to order additional CDs, please visit our website, www.sharim.com, or email sharim@sharim.com. Thank you for making Sharim part of your continual learning experience.
Okay, we're on. We finished the first chelek of Derech Hashem. I am going to. I remember when we were in yeshiva, our mashkiach was like, he was basically the person that was responsible for all our spiritual growth. Was, you know, he was of the opinion that without studying Derech Hashem, you really can't function as a Jew, because you don't want to just go through the motions. You want to know why you're doing things, and how things work, and where to put your effort, and where not to put your effort, and why things happen. To the best of our capability, obviously, you know, with Derech Hashem is very much in that path. Okay. Now, last time we were on, I'll tell you what page, in the gray book, we are, the gray Feldheim book, we are on page 98, okay, 4, Providence, okay, and we're talking about man in this world, chapter 2. Right. It's part 2, chapter 2, Man in this World, 4. Now, in the last class, we actually started discussing the aspect of how man is judged, if you recall. And man is judged based on majority. Okay, if you turn to page 97 in the English, we'll read it out loud. Okay? It's on page 97, the second paragraph from the bottom. It starts with the word, the judgment. The judgment was set up, however, to be in accordance with the majority of one's deeds. The good deeds of the wicked, so that means that the majority of their actions are wicked, but they have good deeds, which are the minority, and the evil deeds of the righteous. Every righteous person also has things that they do that unfortunately are evil, which constitute a minority, are dealt with in this world through its gratifications and sufferings. Remember, what is the Ramchal saying here? The Ramchal is saying that how does God act with us in this world? Based on our majority. How does God act with us in the next world? How does God act with us in this world? Based on our minority. How does God act with us in the next world? Just based on our majority. What's the significance of that? The majority, in a sense, constitutes who you are, right? Your majority constitutes who you are. Since that's the case, so who you are is going to be dealt with for eternity, and that's in the world to come. And in terms of this world, it's the minority. So now, an evil person is majority evil. Now we'll talk about soon how does God judge, you know, what majority minority necessarily. It's not a checklist necessarily, but the evil part of a person is going to be left for the next world. And that's where, God forbid, it becomes eradicated for eternity. However, even this evil person has good deeds, and those good deeds need to be paid off, and that's why they'll receive it in this world. So if a person sees someone who's going through all, you know, constant goodness all the time and doesn't go through any hardships, then that person should be worried. That's a reason to worry. That is, God forbid, you know, almost a sign, in a sense, of an evil person. If you look at the Jewish people's history, we're always going through hardships, right? And if we're the chosen people, why are we always going through hardships? The answer is because we go after the majority. Our reward is saved for the world to come. But in this world, God deals with our minority, and we need to be cleansed constantly. Okay? And the righteous person is going to be going by his, this world is going to be by his minority, so he might be going through hardships. Okay? That's, you know, a very fundamental point. That explains many things. For example, that explains why the history of the Jews has always been a challenge. Why is the concept of, you know, tzaddik v'ralo, righteous person who is suffering, why is he suffering? The answer is because God is judging him in this world by the minority. He wants to save all the reward for the next world. So then you might ask, so why don't you just give me some of the reward in this world? Just give me some of it. Why do I have to go through hardships all the time? The answer is the system in this world can't handle that level. I'll give you an example. For those of us, we're involved in Jerusalem now. You take your 110 pancake maker, the things you guys use for straightening your hair, whatever, the straightener thing, yeah. You plug that 110 thing into the Israeli 210 voltage, what's going to happen to it? It's going to blow up. It's going to burn. Why? It's just a little bit more than it can handle. The answer is, the pleasure in this world, or the reward in this world, it's not sufficient. This world can't hold it. So God saves everything for the world to come. And when we get there, and we would, and let's say God would have given us some reward in this world, we'll say, you know, I got gypped. Look what I could have received. I could have received an eternity of being close to you. Instead, I got an ice cream. Or I got caught a bus. Or even I won the lottery. It's not sufficient for eternity of being close to you. It doesn't compare. It's just not worth it. Yeah.
So then why do we want to be in this world then? Why don't we just...
Very good. So why do we want to be in this world? The reason is that the longer you're here, the more pleasure and the more and the closer to God you can get. If you can get, you know, you have to understand that there is an infinity amount of closeness to God that you can reach. So if you're here for 20, if a person's here for 20 years and they get close to God on the 50th level, if they would stay here for another 20 years after that, they would get to the 100th level and then another 20 years. So we want to extend it here, in a sense, because this is the only place we can make a difference. And after here, when we get upstairs, we cannot make an iota of difference. So we want the length here. Be as hard as you work here, then instead of doing it for 20, you could do it for 40. Okay, yeah. It depends. Sometimes it is minus off. The rewards that we get here could be minus off, could be taken away from what we receive in the world to come, unless you're doing it for the sake of heaven. What does that mean? If you're receiving pleasure in this world for the sake of pleasure only, then God's like, okay, I paid you for your reward. You took it. But if you're receiving reward so that you could lead a better Jewish life, so that you could raise better Jewish children, so you could have a healthy marriage, a healthy life, you know, all that kind of thing, all those kind of things, then even the reward that you received is for spirituality, and that doesn't come off your credit. So for example, they say that a person, the famous story, you know, between Hillel and Shammai, that they used to each buy food for Shabbat. One would buy it on Friday, one would buy it on Shabbat. But the Ben Ish Chai says, a person, if he can, he should go shopping on Friday. All his shopping. We can't, you know, it's very challenging for us to do that. But if you could, why? Because then everything you buy is for Shabbat, and then you don't pay for anything. Because everything, all your expenses are dictated from the beginning of the year, except for whatever you spend on Shabbat. So that means if you shop on Friday for Shabbat, everything you bought, all the food, everything is just, you didn't pay for it. It still didn't come out of your account. So it depends how you live your life. If you buy a nice house so that you can raise good children and they can go to good Jewish schools, then that didn't come off your bank account. If you bought a nice house so that the Joneses have a nice house, then that comes off your bank account. Depends why you do this. It's a mitzvah to dress nice. A Jewish girl, Jewish woman who dresses modestly and looks respectable is a sanctification of God's name. You should appreciate that. You should realize that people are looking at you when you're on the bus, when you're at home. They want to see how you're reacting, how you carry yourself. If you dress nice and respectable, that's sanctifying God's name. That means you have a right to dress nicely. Yeah, you had a question?
Yeah.
I answered it? I love those. Those are my favorite. Those are like, oh, I answered that one. Yeah, good. Those are like, they only come in like once, you know, once a day. Okay, now, let's go to part four. Okay, so that was basically where we had left off in the previous class. Now let's go to Chelek Dalet. Umnam. Start with Umnam. Now we're going to be talking about, the truth is a very fundamental topic, and that is the truth. It's very fundamental. It's very basic. It's very important that we have an understanding of it. Society, in many instances, shuns away from these topics, but it's important that we study it at least once to get a grasp of what's going on. Umnam. Okay, so we're on page 98. Gazar od chasdoit barach, the Almighty in His mercy has ordained la'arbot ha'atzalah livnei adam, that a person has more capabilities of being saved in the world to come. Shimatzeh od min tziruf acher lemi sheyitachen bo tziruf. There's another cleansing process for a person. Tahaynu lemi shegavar bo hara tigborot gadol. Someone who the evil has become so much. But this person is not evil so much that his judgment is to be wiped out. And this is the punishment of hell. Meaning, what is the purpose of hell? The purpose of hell is the following. There are those that are supposed to be wiped out. Okay? They don't have right to exist. Hell is not for them. There are those that are totally righteous and won't go to hell. Hell is not for them. Who is hell for? Those that have sinned and need a cleansing process. Why do they need a cleansing process? So that they continue in heaven and they continue into the world to come. So what? And why does the Ramchal call it a chesed? Why does the Ramchal call hell Geinom a chesed? Because it's a true charity. Meaning, if a person, you know, we don't have so much a sensitivity to this. We don't have so much a sensitivity today to this attribute of a king, you know, and kingship and the like. But in the olden days, when a person would sin against the king, what would be the punishment? Death. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. It doesn't matter what you did wrong. If the king said don't do it and you did it, there's nothing to talk about. Off with your head. This that we sin and God gave us this, you know, cleansing stage. We could do tshuva, we could repent, and if that we don't do that, we there's a hell to clean us out. That is total charity. A person who sins before God has to appreciate how much of a chesed that is. You know, I want to share with you a following true story. In my first years of teaching, I used to teach in a school that was geared towards, you know, boys that come from challenged homes. And it was a challenge to get them into class, needless to say. They weren't interested in coming to class. They weren't interested in... It was more about building relationships with them and then slowly developing, you know, the inner growth within them that way. One day, you know, usually you have 5-6 kids out of 20 who show up. These are older, you know, these boys in their 18s and their 20s. One day, 25 boys show up to class. I'm like, hey, what's going on? What did you guys do wrong? No, we have to pray for our friends. We have to pray for our friends. Just, today's class is for our friends. I go, what's going on? Today's is court day. It's court day. What happened? Unfortunately, it's something that took place in a Jewish community, that there was a boy who had, you know, was pulling off a drug deal with his friends. And they had met him at a certain street, and he was supposed to provide them with certain goods. And they ended up, there was like three of them, they ended up jumping on him, beating him up, taking the goods that he had, and running away with the money. He got into his van and was going to drive away or something like that. And three of them stood in front of the van and said, the second you get out of that van, we're not moving, the second you get out of the van, we're going to kill you. And he said, if you guys don't move, we're going to run you over. And, you know, push comes to shove, one, twice, three times, and two of the kids walk away. One of them stays there and he runs him over. He kills him. And the court took him, they started judging him, what was going to be his punishment. And these boys knew him, it seems, you know. And that day was his court case. What was it? Either he was going to be put into jail or he was going to be under house arrest. Something to that extent. So that day was the deciding factor. Now let's say, I want to ask you a question. What would the reaction of this boy be if the judge came to him and says, listen, if you say I'm sorry, then we'll forgive you. But if you say I'm sorry, and you do it out of love, not only will we forgive you, but we're going to give you $1 million to start off your life. What do you say? What would that boy say? Right? It just doesn't make sense. And it's so forthcoming of the judge, is it not true? Now, isn't the Almighty, in a sense, saying the same thing to us? If you stop doing things wrong, I'll forgive you. But I have a better plan for you. If you do it, if you do tshuva, if you repent out of love, then your sins turn into merit. Oh, that makes sense. Oh, that's good. So that non-kosher item I was eating turns into a kosher item with a bracha and a benching afterwards. That's a good deal. That's why the Ramchal calls this whole concept of chesed. It's not deserving. We're not deserving of it. It should be that when a person sins, they should be punished, and that's it. Something to talk about. Okay. So here, this whole concept of being cleansed is such a chesed in the hands of God. It's pure mercy. Okay. And just to give you an idea, you know, when as difficult as it may seem, but at the end of the day, you know, when a person repents and he evades all this, then it's just out of pure love of the Almighty. Okay? So let's go on. So that's what Gehinnom is for. That is what hell is for. Hell is dedicated, is meant for those that need to be cleansed and will continue. And the point of hell is to punish the person according to his sin. so that she'achrei ha'onsho lo ye od chov alav ala maaseh hara she'asa. The point of hell is to cleanse the person to such an extent that after the cleansing process he's clean, and they can now continue with life, so to speak, and they can join the rest of the righteous in heaven and in the world to come. And you have to appreciate, you have to recognize the significance of studying these things, because we can't leave Judaism up as like some widgy-bidgy, Star Wars-y movie type of like, you know, hell, heaven type of thing. It has to make sense to you. It gives a person strength to appreciate what he's doing in life. Okay? Okay, so that's what he's saying. V'yuchal acheken lekabel agmul ha'amiti kifi shal ma'asav atuvim. What hell does is it cleanses a person, and then he's able to receive the ultimate reward that's coming to him for all of his actions. V'nimtza. So it comes out, based on this, comes out, sha'aledei zeh ha'ovdim mamash yumiz'ar lo kabil. So it comes out based on this, that those that will be eternally lost will be very few. Why will they be very few? Because either they're righteous, even if they're evil, there's a default system which can pick them up again, which sort of can cleanse them, you know? So in essence, those that will be totally lost are only those, God forbid, that either were tremendously evil, or did things maliciously, or did certain sins that warrant them being wiped out. But in terms of like the whole society, as the Ramchal is saying, they're going to make it. It's not going to be a smooth process for everybody. And for those that are sinning, it's going to be a painful process, but they're going to make it.
Wiped
out means that a person's soul is eradicated from existence. Okay? That's what wiped out means. Those will be wiped out are those that the evil was so big in them, who will be wiped out? Those that were so evil that there was no room left to cleanse them. You know, sometimes it's like, you know, like even in a relationship, there's like nothing to work with. You know, it's not worth another shot because there's no partner, there's nothing there to put together. You know, and so in a similar vein, if the soul is so blemished, it's so blemished from sin that there's nothing to cleanse, that the cleansing process will just eradicate it, that's the type of person, God forbid, that's eradicated. But all the rest either will make it to heaven, or they will be cleansed through hell. Yeah.
People who don't know. You're not talking about like
Tinoch Shemesh. Absolutely not talking about Tinoch Shemesh, but absolutely not talking about people that don't know. Okay. People who don't know are not evil.
Even if they're doing things
wrong. Even if they're doing things wrong. Right. They're not evil.
Okay.
They might be held accountable for not pursuing the truth.
Yeah, right.
They might be held accountable for why didn't you search, why didn't you ask, why did you live life as a zombie, but they're not evil. Evil is more to the type of person who knows and goes against. And even those that know in our generation tend to be really not knowing. You know? Even those that know, even if they grew up, you know, in some type of religious atmosphere, it wasn't exposed to them in the proper fashion. So they're not considered knowing. V'hine, Nimsa, Hadin mitchalek l'shlusha chalakim. It comes out that judgment is separated into three parts. Ki karohu la'olam she'achar atfiyah kmo she'zachanu. The main part of it is the judgment that will be left after the reincarnation, which is Olam Haba. Let's understand like this. There's Olam Hazeh, this world. There's heaven and hell, which are two forms of a waiting room. And after that, there's Olam Haba, the world to come. The world to come will happen after the resurrection of the dead. Okay? We're all going to die. I'm sorry to like break the news. Even those who are alive when Mashiach comes have to die, for reasons that the Ramchal is going to talk about later on, for whatever reason that is. But we're all going to die and then be resurrected. And then there's the concept of eternity and sitting with God. That's Olam Haba. Before that stage is heaven and hell. Hell is the cleansing process that lets you go into the waiting room of heaven. Heaven is the waiting room of Olam Haba. It's just like a great, positive, everything you can imagine, pleasure room. But it's not the real thing yet. Okay? And then there's this world, which we probably understand. Now, there are certain parts of us that will be, there are certain rewards rewards or punishment that we receive in this world. Part of them will be in this world, and part of them in the world of neshamot, the world of the souls. Now, just to give us an idea, when you know, when Moshe Rabbeinu saw, God showed Moshe Rabbeinu, he took him through all the generations, he also showed him heaven and hell. He didn't show him Olam Haba, he didn't show him the world to come, because no man has seen that. And this is Ayin Lo Ra'ata, the entire world is not seen. No eye has seen the world to come. But hell, Moshe Rabbeinu did see, and Moshe Rabbeinu was so shaken up by hell, that only when God told him, there you won't go, did Moshe Rabbeinu calm down. You know, it was only, you know, so, it, you know, it, whatever it is, it's got to be pretty intense. Now,
does everyone go to hell?
Does everyone go? No. The point, now we'll speak about how people do a vikunshka in the Tila. We'll speak about how there are those that can avoid actual hell. We'll talk about that, okay, in this section. Now, the Ramchal speaks about in a different place what hell is actually consists of. Just to give us a little bit of an understanding of it, he says like this in Otsvot Ramchal: "Bederech shadam olech ba'olam hazeh, ba'olech la'char mitato." And the path that a person goes in this world, that's the path that they follow in the world to come. So, for example, says Ramchal, "Dugma mishe ganav ba'olam hazeh." Let's say a person stole in this world. He's going to steal in the Olam Haba. He's going to steal in the world to come. Now, what is in the world to come in hell if he's stealing? Fire, says Ramchal. Ze'esh. So he's going to be stealing fire. What's he going to be doing? He's going to be incorporating it into himself. So Ramchal and Rav Dessler speaks about this as well. He speaks about what is the punishment, just to give us an a little bit of an understanding of what it is. What is the real punishment of hell? Is it takes the personality's characteristic traits and it makes them existing in the world, in the next world, in the heavens. What does that mean? I'll give you an example. Let's say, for example, what would be the punishment of somebody who's tremendously materialistic and always searching to fulfill his desires? What would be the punishment of that? So what are you doing? You're always looking to swallow, to chase more and more, never happy with what you have. So Baruch Hashem, the Rav Dessler speaks about this a little bit. I'll give you a little bit of a parable to make it real. You know when you're flying back home, we're all in Jerusalem now, you're flying back home, and the bus is honking, called Menashe Sofer, your stuff's downstairs, and you check your little pocket, you know, your little carry-on pocket, and you're searching through, you've got your ticket and everything like that, and you're looking for your passport. And you can't find your passport. And the bus is honking, you're downstairs, and your flight's in an hour and a half, you're already late, you have to be at the airport, so you start, like, in an insane fashion, searching for your passport. You know what I'm talking about? I can't find my passport. Oh my God, my passport. You start thinking, I'm going to have to go to the American Council, I'm going to miss my flight, and my friend's wedding is the next day, and I can't believe it, and I'm not going to get credit, it's the last day I can credit my ticket, and you're just like turning over anything that doesn't move in the house looking for your passport. Right? Imagine a person in the world to come living like that. Just searching for materialism in that world, and it doesn't exist there. So he's searching constantly, just has this, you know, internal burning sensation of searching and searching and desire, nothing makes him happy, and he gets to the world to come and there's nothing there to satiate it. So that's what it means, that the way a person lived his life in this world is the way, that's the punishment of him in the world to come. What Ramchal is saying is that the cleansing process is mainly based on the sins that we were chasing off after. Okay? That's what, I think that answers your question that you had asked before. Is that attribute of, you know, how does the punishment occur over there? So part of it is, as we can imagine, it's a physical cleansing process. Another part of it is just the, you know, the raging personality that we have within us is just set free, searching, and it's never happy and never satiated. And that's just, you know, imagine searching for your passport for hours and hours at end, never finding it, and always looking for it. You should go crazy after a while. Okay? Well, let's go on. Achen. Mishpatei ha-din hazeh p'ratav einenu noda ki im l'shofet ha-amiti levado. This judgment call is only known to God, meaning only God can decide what's considered evil, righteous, wicked. Only God holds that balance. Because only God knows the level of stringency and perseverance that a person had to fulfill the actions. He knows how easy it was for you, how difficult it was for you, what the situation, what your state of mind was. I'll give you an example in a moment. But v'yodeh ma mihem ha-ra'ush shigamel v'zman echad u'bederech echad, u'ma mizman acher u'bederech acher. So I'll give you an example of this. Rav Tzadka, who's the Rosh Shiva of Porat Yosef, said the following, that the difference, one of the differences between Judaism and just regular, you know, college studying, is that in college they'll judge you based on your grade. And in Judaism they judge you based on your effort. So, for example, a person who grew up religious and a person who didn't grow up religious, who are both praying, the level of prayer for both of them is totally different. Meaning, the person who grew up religious, for him to pray is almost not a big deal. This is the way I've always been doing it. All my family, all my friends are doing it. They're all, you know, this is a cool thing to do in my society. It's not a big deal. But a person who in the middle of their life, or at some point in life, embraced upon themselves Torah and Judaism, encounters themselves when they first start praying, why am I talking to a book and asking them for help? And that they should help me find my spouse. And that it's a book. And then we tell you, no, they should stand next to the wall and pray. So next to what wall and pray for who? I don't see anything when I'm standing next to the wall. Okay? It's a different type of prayer. So they both might be saying the same words, but obviously the level of reward is different. In addition to that, the level of challenge is different. A person who had at one point knew what it was not to keep kosher, and knew the pleasure that they received from all the non-kosher delicacies, and then stopped, is obviously much different than someone who never encountered and was never in the society, never has tasted something not kosher, right? So that's what the Ramchal is saying, that this ultimate judgment call is only in the hands of God. Okay, only God knows the specifics of reward and punishment, because it's not based just on the dry action, it's much more based on the effort. So, for example, if a person has the capability of conquering the sin, and they don't, we're held much more accountable. Right? As opposed to if a person has a hard time, he's battling the sin. That's why, you know, the punishment for someone who steals a goat and the punishment for someone who steals a bull is two different punishments. Why? How do you steal a goat? You put it on your shoulder and you run. So it's embarrassing. Everybody knows that you're stealing. So the punishment, you only have to pay four times as much. Why? Because it was embarrassing. The one who steals a, you know, a cow or a, you know, something like that, you drag it along. It's not as embarrassing. Not everybody knows you're stealing. So that you pay five times as much. So even within a robber, God takes into account how challenging it was for them. So what this teaches us is that when a person is, you know, going through a challenge, at least, if you know you're going to fall, at least go down fighting. At least go down fighting, right? No, it's true. Don't throw in the towel and say, like, look, I'm going to sin anyway. I might as well really, like, if I'm going to do it, put on the extra cheese. You know what I'm saying? Like, just kidding on with the whole thing, bacon and everything's there. No, right, go for it. No, the Torah doesn't say that. Go down fighting. Meaning at least make an effort to minimize the possibility as much. Why? Because again, that effort of battle that you have to make the sin not happen is also in the equation. Now, on the flip side as well, there's sinning, and if a person, God forbid, is the one who's really getting everybody riled up and organizing the event, the sinful event, you know, that's also taken into account. That also has to be atoned for. So that, many times I'll have students who will tell me, like, Rabbi, I just don't feel it. I used to feel it, now I don't feel it. I'm like, feel what? You know, I don't feel inspired anymore. That's God's way of cleansing all the emotion and happiness that one might have put into a sin. There's actual, you know, sin, and then there's the emotion and the excitement and the whole feeling on, how's God going to cleanse that? He's going to take that away from your mitzvot and see if you keep going. That's the cleansing process. So the ultimate judgment is in, it's all dependent on the Almighty's wisdom. We can't judge something like that, yeah.
Also?
Yes, that's what we're talking about. Now we're going to get into that more, but we are cleansed here. We're lucky if we get cleansed here. Yes.
So then, if we can be cleansed here,
why doesn't everyone get cleansed here? Because many people, for some people, the cleansing process here will be more of a cause for them for sin. For example, like we're sitting within the room now, and it's very nice and idealistic. But if we lose our wallet, we're going to be like, I can't believe this. I just started keeping Shabbat and this is what happens to me? Right? There are people who will use the cleansing process as like, why are you doing this to me, God? I don't deserve this. They'll sort of use it against God. They can't handle the cleansing process. So God's going to have to keep it for the next world. Or sometimes they're not lucky enough to be cleansed here. They're not lucky enough. The judgment is not equal. Meaning, to be cleansed here is a merit, because the punishment here is infinitely easier than it is in the heavens. Again, these are like, you know, these are fundamental aspects of Judaism. It really, this whole chapter puts into perspective very much challenges and hardships and where they belong in life and why God sends them to us. Now, further on, there's, you know, just to put this more in perspective, there's a famous story with the Baal Shem Tov. That one time, it was the last prayer of Yom Kippur, and the Baal Shem Tov was holding the entire congregation from praying. And he was just waiting and waiting and waiting, and they said, we want to proceed, the time is going to pass. He was just waiting, everybody's getting restless, and he just kept his own thing, the whole, and nobody dared to continue praying, because the Baal Shem Tov said, don't, can't pray. Everybody waited. At one point, he just said, okay, let's proceed. After the prayer, everybody said, okay, what happened before and what happened after? So I'll tell you like this, all of our prayers were being paused and on stop in the heavens. None of the prayers of the Jewish people were going up. They weren't going through. There was a tremendous amount of deterrence. So what stopped? He said, there's this one boy that came into synagogue, a little boy, and wanted to pray so much, but he didn't know how to pray. What did he do? He knew how to make a noise of a rooster. He knew how to make a noise of a rooster. He didn't know how to pray, he didn't know how to read, but he knew how to make a noise of a rooster. That was what he was like professional at. So he did that with so much love and emotion, that was his way of crying out to God. So God took that noise of the rooster, and everybody in the synagogue was yelling at him and kicking him out and saying, what are you doing? But God took that noise of the rooster, and that was like the pin, that was the sword that broke open the heavens, and all the praise of the Jewish people can go up, and then we proceeded. So again, the ultimate judgment is based on the effort, it's not based on the production. That is what the Ramchal is saying here. Okay? Very good. Let's go on now to the next section. Hey, Vihine. Shetamik od binyan hazeh, when we go deeper into this, tira'e, you shall see, shemilivat hiyot inyan hazeh nimshach al pi ha-mishpat v'adim kumo shezachanu, other than the fact that this is all based on a judgment that the Almighty provides for us, hino miyusad od al pi ha-metzi'ut ha-nivra. This also depends, as the Ramchal explains, on the level of the being. What does that mean? I'm going to read it in English. Looking into this more deeply, we see that besides the fact that this is required by fairness and judgment, it is also based on the essential concept of man. Vize, ki ine kvar bi'arnu, shamaasim atuvim ma'atzmim hem ba'adam. What do good deeds do to the person? Begufo benafsho, they become part of his physical and spiritual DNA. Mitziut shlemut u'ma'ala, they turn the person into a spiritual and perfect being. Ve'ofcham, an evil, and when a person does evil or sin, his spiritual DNA becomes evil. The actions that we do transform who we are spiritually and physically. I'll give an example. Why is it that Amalek, the decree is to kill Amalek, and we can't give them life? Why? Because God knows that their actions were so evil that they can't be fixed. So too, the good things that we do, they change our being. And that is, you know, that merits reward or punishment. I'll give an example. We've spoken about this in the past. You know, we have the concept in physical terms, you are what you eat. So in spiritual terms, this is similar. When you eat something, it transforms you into some different type of being. Well, let's just pick on one mitzvah, which transforms your spiritual being, kosher. What are the two necessities of kosher? Chews its cud and split hooves, right? Chews its cud and split hooves. Now, what is chewing its cud represented, as we've spoken out? It's right. It represents the attribute of patience. Why? When you see an animal, for example, like a lion jumping on another animal, what do you call him? We call that lion. You call him an animal. Like, what does that mean? That means there's no patience. He's just swallowing it up. No measure of waiting, of self-control. Just jumping on the animal and killing it. So when an animal chews its cud, it's sort of saying, like, I'm not looking to swallow the world in one moment, but I have patience, I have control over the materialism. Split hooves is also representative, as we said, when the Kohen makes a blessing, they split their fingers up, because that's where the blessing comes through, and that's the attribute of givingness, of kindness. So to split hooves represents that. When you have both of those together, not just one, but both of those, we can understand why eating those animals will change our spiritual DNA. Why, when you keep kosher, your heart is open to spirituality, and you're a merciful being. Okay? and we take every mitzvah in one way or the other, they do that. Tefillin, you put them on your hand and on your head to subjugate your heart and your mind to God. Modesty, it's an internal growth of a woman, you know, of a man. Every mitzvah is meant to change our spiritual DNA. And now, and physicality is, and the materialism is the exact opposite. Okay? V'hine, ha'isha tzadik, the person cleanses himself, the righteous person that cleanses himself, but he has a minute amount of actions that are bad. What happens to the person who's mostly righteous, but minute part of him is has got sin? He's got some of that cleansing necessary. So long as this righteous person has within him part of him that's impure, he can't be compatible to God. Because God is 100% goodness, He's 100% kindness. And in order to sit next to God in the world to come, you have to be compatible to Him. You cannot have part of you that won't fit the piece. Okay? Just like when you get dressed and you go to a nice party, a nice event, everything has to match. And you're not going to say, well, you know, you're not going to wear whatever it is, a white, whatever you put, a dress or a gown or something with a green shirt. You know, it's just, what's the difference? It's just a scarf. No, everything has to, like, or the shoes have to match just as much. Every part of you has to be compatible to God in order to reach that level of what? No, it's very hard. Right. Stopping for me.
I thought you were joking around, but really.
No. I try very hard, and I've been married for like a few years. So whatever. Some things just don't make sense to us. Like shoes, how they have to match, and every outfit, and flats and heels, all that stuff. The whole science I never really got down to.
Otherwise, what is?
Yeah, totally. Not only, but definitely, the purely righteous will not go through hell. It says also, for example, people who have students won't go through hell, because it's not respectable for the rabbi to be in hell and the students to see him there, even though he needs cleansing. He might have something that needs cleansing as well.
And I'm going to be a teacher.
Not a teacher. Any person who's like, you know, a spiritual mentor and bringing the masses back to Judaism,
wow.
It's not appropriate for them to be in heaven and the students are in hell and the students are like, hey, look at the rabbi. You know? Okay. So let's give me 4 or 5 more lines, okay? And then we'll get to it. I think. Okay. Al ken gazal chesed alyon shimatzelo tziruf vu klal ayisurim. So now, there is this righteous person. Here's the punchline. There's this righteous person that has within them mixed. There's this righteous person that has within them a minute portion that needs to be cleansed. For this, God did not create hell. God created yisurim, hardships in this world. And that's who hardships for this world are for. The righteous that need to be cleansed. Why? Because it's not appropriate to send them to hell. Right? And he can't get off scot-free. So he's got to be cleansed. So God gives him hardships. And that's why you will see, like as we mentioned, Jewish people, righteous people going through hardships. So who is hell intended for? Hell intended is intended for those that this world was not enough to cleanse them. They were entrenched in sin, but the physicality of this world was not enough to cleanse them. And you very much see this very much, you know, goes very well with the Gemara, that a person... That the Gemara, you know, our sages say, if you see a person who is, if things are going too smooth for him, you should feel bad for him. What do you mean feel bad for him? The whole world feels happy for him. He's on the cover of every magazine. This is who we look up to. This is who we aspire to. We got t-shirts, hats, posters. The answer is, if a person's got it too smooth in life, that means either he's totally righteous, and that's pretty easy to figure that one out, or he's so evil that this world can't cleanse them. So what do hardships, what do yisurim mean? What do hardships mean? Hardships mean God cares about you and believes in you and feels that I can, that it's worth it for me to cleanse you in this world. And that's why Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, before going to sleep every night, used to welcome the hardships every night. He had, we'd spoken about this in the past, he had a certain ailment on his skin. He had like pus. It says his wife used to change his sheets 17 times every night. 17 times every night. He used to get full of pus. And he used to say, Bo chavirai, come my friends. Why? Because he understood what the purpose of hardship was. Okay, let's go.
Yes,
I'm not going to answer that one. Yeah, right, exactly. Those who God loves, he rebukes. Very good. Ve'umnam.
כפי שיעור האחירות שקיבל האדם במעשיו, כך יהיו היסורים שיצטרכו לצרפו.
The amount of darkness that the sin has imposed on the person, that's how much he has to be cleansed. ואפשר שלא יהיה בכוח היסורים הגפנים להסיר. Sometimes the physical ailments won't be enough to cleanse the person. ויצטרכו לו ייסורים נפשיים. And then a person will need spiritual type of cleansing. Okay? Sometimes... Okay, so first of all, let's build this up a little bit. First of all, we have to appreciate the fact that challenges in life are not a sign of God not wanting us. It's a sign of God wanting us. A. B. If a person is maliciously doing something wrong, like sticking his hand into a fire, you can't say, God, why are you sending this to me? Right? But if a person is going with guidance of the Torah, has, you know, a Torah community, has a Torah personality, just a Torah rabbi that they're connected to and following the right path, and things are coming their way, then that's God's choice. That's the first thing. Secondly, what we have to ask is, why doesn't God just forgive the sin? Why is he working so hard to cleanse it? Just forgive. Anyway, why do you have to bend over backwards to cleanse it? Just forgive it. What's the reason for that? I would also venture to say that God works as a form of he's a God of justice, meaning in order for him to give us reward for every minute positive action that we did, he has to punish us for every minute sin that we did. It's otherwise it's not fair, right? So he can't just wipe the slate clean. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, who was, you know, went up to the heavens, got punished. Oh, come on, let's face it. He's a pretty good person. He sort of determined, deserves to be on your top 10 at least, right? And he's done enough for you to maybe overlook that little hitting of the stone type of thing. You know, I work with running programs for youth coming to Israel. So 2-3 week programs, okay? It gets pretty intense there with like 40 Jews for 3 weeks. Imagine 40 years with the whole Jewish nation. I wouldn't hit the stone. I would hit the people. Okay? There's no question about it. I would not just hit the stone. I would hit the people. So why didn't God just overlook it? Because in order for God, and this has to make perfect sense, in order for God to give us exact credit for every possible small good deed, he has to also punish us for every small bad deed. That's only fair. So the punishment can come in a few forms. Either it can come in the world, in the next world, which is Gehinnom, or... in the easier ratio, which is in this world, which is hardships, and that's what the righteous will get. And that's what the Ramchal is saying here. So, is there any question? Does that, yeah, now you can ask away.
Well, you said before that if you want to sleep every night and then in spite of the hardships, aren't we not supposed to, like, look for tests? We're not supposed to look for hardships, you know? Like,
You're not supposed to look for tests. A person is not allowed to test himself, but if tests are coming your way, you have to embrace them with happiness.
So then what's the difference between tests and hardships?
A test is a person putting themselves in a sinful predicament. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai would put himself in a place of not modesty and say, okay, I'm going to cover my eyes and survive this. That's called looking for a test. But a hardship is a person is unfortunately received an ailment. You didn't ask for that. You didn't look for that. There's nothing you did to acquire that. It comes your way. Right? If you're not asking for a challenge, the person loses his job. That's a challenge coming their way. They didn't ask for it. But if a person goes to a club and says, God, why are you testing me with all these tests? What do you mean? You don't put yourself in it. Okay? So this is challenges on a constant basis. There is such a concept as a person accepting upon themselves challenges. What does that mean? Now, this has to be taken in the right proportion, especially in our generation when we're like, you know, anything hard that comes our way, we just want to throw in the towel. You know, we don't have the patience to cook anything, we just microwave everything, so we're for sure not going to have the patience to persevere test. But there is something called Ta'anit HaRa'avad. Ta'anit HaRa'avad is a fast of the Ra'avad, a certain Torah sage, that what was his fast pertaining of? Just to give you an example, like, you know, if he would want, you know, he would be eating something, and there would be leftover food on his plate, and he's full. They're full already. So he would refrain from eating the rest, you know, because he's saying I'm controlling myself for whatever is left. That's something like a person saying, like, you know, that's something a person saying, like, it's almost like a self-inflicted hardship. This has to be taken with really a lot of mentoring, because in our generation, a person could take that way too far. But just, you know, for example, if a person, you know, just says, you know, is going to make it a point to go to sleep early and wake up on time for the sake of heaven, so to speak, you know, and it's a real big challenge for them. That would be something like where a person takes upon themselves a certain challenge and is productive in that sense. Okay, but Yom Kippur is something that God put into the system to cleanse us. It's important to mention that, because Yom Kippur is almost like another one of these, you know, every year we have a cleansing process. Why do nations disappear? Because they don't have a Yom Kippur. Because after a person, after 60 years, has never been cleansed once. You know, imagine you never clean your computer, your emails. You never clean them out. After a certain time, it just doesn't work. It's too heavy. Same thing here. That the Yom Kippur make sure every year we're cleansed to some extent. So after 120, we don't have that much cleansing to do. Okay, that's the significance of that. Now I want to end off with a story of the Chida. The Chida says the following story. There was once a person who came to complain about all the hardships that he had going on in his life. And he comes to the Chida, and the Chida, Rabbi Chaim Yosef David Azulay, was sitting in his office, you know, this took place 200-300 years ago, and he says to him, just wait for a moment. And the person says, look, I really have a hard life, and I need to, you know, I want to talk to you about it. He says, look, I'm just in the middle of something, give me a minute or two. He sits on the couch and he falls asleep. In his sleep, he has a dream. He dreams that he's going up to heaven, and in heaven he's being judged. He's sitting there in the court, and the Almighty calls all of the angels of the things that he's done that are good, and they put him on a scale. So they call every prayer, every bracha, every blessing, every, you know, every good aspect he's ever done, and he's got this like massive white light box on, you know, the left side of the scale. And then, you know, the person's all happy and says, great, I'm gonna make it in. And then he says, wait just a minute, we're gonna call over all the sins he's done, and he sees like loads and loads of sin, you know. And then they put one sin and the scale starts getting, you know, a little higher. They put another sin, and the scale gets higher. They put another sin, another sin, another sin, another sin. Finally, he's done more sin than good. So the scale for the sin is down, and he realizes what his fate is going to be, and he's petrified. So they're about to take him away, and God says, just a minute, just a second, let's go through all the hardships. So they start, now you have to imagine, all the sin is tilting the entire scale to the right, and all, you know, it's much heavier. They call off all the hardships. Every hardship that comes takes a bite out of the sin. And the scale slowly starts to get, you know, starts becoming a little bit equal. It takes another bite, every hardship, this hardship, that hardship, this hardship. Finally, it's almost at the level of like 50, you know, and he needs like one more good hardship to just tilt the scale. So he's, you know, and the Almighty says, okay, any more hardships coming our way? And the old angels say, that's it, we're finished. And the guy's petrified, there's no more hardship, the scale of the right, of the hardship is still there. And he starts screaming, more hardships, screaming, everybody, there's more hardships in the court case, more hardships, more. And he wakes up, and he's screaming at the Chida, more hardships, and the Chida's like, what are you talking about? And the Chida says to him, what did you want to talk about? He says, no, everything's okay, no problem whatsoever. He says, okay. What was the point? The point is that the hardships are a cleansing process. And if we're lucky, we get them in this world. And that's how the Ramchal puts everything into focus. Right? So we've spoken about many, many very significant, we've only done, you know, two paragraphs or so, but we've spoken about many, many powerful Yisodot in Judaism. Okay, we'll stop here.